Today's special episode is brought to you by Starting Points, Operationally Curious Questions. Begin pre-event learning with our best-selling Operationally Curious Conversation Starters. Download the app at startingpoints.app or the App Store, and purchase card decks at www.startingpointcards.com.
On today's episode of the Hot Nerd Podcast, I'm going to do things a little bit different, a little bit weird, something a little bit strange. I'm going to ask AI to ask me questions about hop, and then we'll see how it goes. I know it's going to get weird. Let's go. Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at thehopnerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Whether this is your first time joining us or your 340-something time joining us, because that's kind of where we're at on episodes. We're slowly whittling away. We're chipping away at it. We're getting closer to that 400 mark episode by episode, which is crazy because I don't really keep that much count of these things, and I wasn't in particular. A while back, I made like a guide for the podcast, which is painfully out of date now. It's just not current. I need to do that again. But if you're interested in going back and seeing all the old episodes without having to scroll like all the way back through and just like read that one, if you're on Spotify, if I can talk this more, hold on. I need more cold brew. Hold on. Wait a second. I need one of these two. Hold on. Some of you know what this is. Hold on. Okay. Now I'm prepared to podcast. But if you're interested in that, it's a cool little episode guide with some reflections and thoughts and stuff like that. And I'm going to do another one. I just haven't had time. My goal was to do one every January, and it's January, and it's the end of January almost, and it's not happened. So I don't know. When I get everything else called up, so probably like July, it might happen. But when I made that thing, I counted them. Like I had to count them for that, which was kind of interesting. And then as I started to change up some of like the pod art, you've seen like we do different pod arts. I do kind of the standard one now. So every episode has like its own piece of pod art, which isn't the standard one isn't really pod art. It's a template with some funky pictures that we take. But we work with artists and stuff. And then I've drawn some stuff for it. And then Avery's drawn some stuff for it. And just anything that, you know, we want to throw in there that's just not just the podcast logo. When I started doing that, I'm like, oh, let's throw the episode number on there. And then so I've been kind of keeping track of it, not directly, but indirectly, just through making all these other like more unique things for the pod, because that's an effort, right? We record the pod and don't just throw it out there. We record the pod and then we record, especially when we have interviews, we do snippets of the pod. I don't do that when it's just me and you. And then we do the art for the pod, and then we tell people about the pod, and like it's yeah. So then through all of that process, and it is a process. I was like, okay, I've got to put numbers on these, and there we go. And I can't tell you exactly what it is. Back to my little break there at the beginning, which I'm gonna take another one. Yeah, if you guessed it, that was a can of Zen. Ooh, naughty, shamey, naughty, shamey. Which, if you're a Zen fan, as I am, and I am in no way sponsored by anybody, actually, which is interesting. But Zen, I used to dip. So we would call dip. Some of you might call it chew. I would use smokeless tobacco for many, 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 many years. I found my way into that super early. It was some of that nature where I was from. I'm a hillbilly, y'all. And yeah, we found that stuff pretty early. It was pretty a normal thing to see anywhere you went. And I started doing that really, really early. And I did that for years and years and years and years and years and years. And I did that every time I would quit. The nature of where I'm from then turned into the nature of my job. As you know, power plants and construction sites and a lot of places where it's either you're not supposed to smoke or it's really hard to smoke. People that normally smoke start chewing. People that chew more. And then it wasn't uncommon to walk into a meeting, even with an executive team, with an executive. Oh, here comes the scary part for my safety friends. Where you'd walk into a meeting with an executive team and somebody would like whip out a pocket knife and like, whoosh, and then start cutting the top out of an empty Diet Coke can to spit it. It was just everywhere. So every time I try to quit, I went the cold turkey route for like a long, 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 long time. Every time I would quit, it would be everywhere. And I would do good. I would do good. And then you know how our jobs go, especially in our world. Stress. Yes, stress. Problems. And I found myself right back. This is a long way to tell you that Zen just recently won like a pretty big legal battle, I guess. The little like bodega vape store place that I stop at and buy mine, because I used to order it. I've moaned about this on here before. I used to order it because I travel a bunch, so I'd order it in bulk, and I only order it like a couple times a year. And I just order it all, and there it was. I'd throw it in the top of my closet, and when I needed one, I'd just go grab it. You know, it's super simple and easy. And super and easy, and especially when you travel a bunch, and then when you're home, you're lazy. You don't want to get in the car and drive down to the corner store, you know. It would just be there, and then all that changed because of, like, lawsuits and all kinds of stuff that happens with that. But this is a rambly way of saying that I'm kind of excited because I'm hoping that online sales of that stuff come back. Who knows? They won a key decision. I had it pulled up here. I was reading it with the FDA, as it's now a smoking cessation product, which is this is the reason why I'm telling you, as I think it is. I think the first thing I'll share with you is if you don't use, like, cigarettes, ugh, or smokeless tobacco. Ugh. I know. Look, I was the first person to say, don't tell me it's ugh. I love it. And I did. This is the thing that's helped me stay quit the longest. And I think that's good because I don't know that it's great for you. It's probably not great for you. I don't know. I don't know. Zen, tell us, like, let us know. But it's got to be way better. Right. It's got to be way better. So I'm kind of excited for that. And I know many of you tell me about your Zen thing, too. That's the only reason why I share is that as I'm out and about, everybody out there, at least about half of you go, hey, listen. Yeah, I was in Copenhagen, or I was smoking, or then I started vaping and then I couldn't breathe. And then I started using these, and I heard you talking about them. Look, what flavor do you have? Oh, I've got this. You want to swap? Yes, I know what you're doing out there. Don't shame me. Don't shame on me, because I know you do it too. And at least it's way better. It's way better than what we were doing, right? So that's kind of cool. Hopefully we see that change up, and it get a little bit easier for us to find it, other than having to jump in your car and then go down to the vape store or the bodega thing, whatever you want to call it. And then go to buy like five, and they're like, you can only buy two because we're always out. That's no fun. And all the other ones, I don't know. They all kind of sort of seem, I don't want to say they suck. I found some that are better than others, but I can't do the Rogues. I don't like it. They're too like sticky. Zen's my thing. And Hero in the airports, y'all. Come on, right? Yeah, you know what I'm to come on. You know. Okay, on to more important things. A whole bunch of videos coming out with all kinds of funnies that we've been making around here. And so I've got about six or seven that are coming out over the next couple weeks, few weeks. And I think you'll get a real kick out of them. So make sure you're following along. If you're following along on Instagram, you get them faster than everybody else. That's just at the Hotner. You'll see. It's hard to miss. You'll see me. You'll see Daryl. You'll see all the other stuff. You kind of know what we all look like. You'll spot it. And then LinkedIn. The easiest place to follow me is just my main page, just Sam Goodman. Just go follow Sam Goodman. You can follow all the company pages and all that stuff. The posts and things like that are a little bit more sporadic on those. Time, busy. I post on those things, but give those a follow too, because you never know what type of weird, strange, different something I'm gonna share through there. And we share a lot of announcements through those. So whenever we decide to do like some of those public courses or different things like that, those are great places to find them as as well. And YouTube, obviously. YouTube, we're posting larger size videos of these instead of like the little square ones we post on LinkedIn or the little vertical ones we post, you know, over on Instagram and all those different places. And a little on TikTok, especially now that since it was banned and then unbanned and then who knows. But I do share those over on TikTok eventually too. But YouTube is a great place because if you want to share them, if you want to use them for something, if you want to use them during your meetings or you're just like, hey, check this out. YouTube, super, super duper easy for that, especially for those full size videos. And we're compiling these into larger, longer episodes. We've already released one, and I've got another one that's just, it's cooking. It's just about ready. So those are between 10, 15 minutes. 10's kind of the goal. That's kind of the minimum I'm shooting for with a compilation of these clips. It's got to kind of be at least 10 or it's not worth putting together. And then if it's more than that, great. It can be as long as they want it to be. Other than that, check out the books. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com. If you need a hand on your human and organizational performance journey, you can get in touch at thehopnerd@gmail.com. Just shoot me an email. Or if you just want to throw some time on my calendar and it's like, I'm ready. Let's talk about it. Let's get it planned out. You can just click over on the website, book a consult, and you can throw some time right on my calendar. I try my best to make this happen when you schedule them. Every now and again, I got to move. We know life, but I try my best not to move them around too much because the calendar, I keep the calendar pretty current. And speaking of which, you know my gripe. It's not a gripe or a moan. It's a, hey, I don't want to disappoint you. If you need a hand and you're thinking you're going to need a hand, let's get those dates locked down earlier than later, because the sooner we get them locked down on the calendar, man, I hate it. You know, I told you this like the past few episodes. It's like the worst because I've had to do it several times over the past month or so where it's like, I can't help you. Like here's some great folks. I'll give folks a list of like great folks that I know won't steer them wrong, that will point them in the right direction. Folks that sound like Stephen Scott and folks that sound like Andrea Baker or Bob Edwards, like those kind of folks. I will point them in. I will point you in their direction. But like if you call me and say we're planning on you being here and now we found out you can't be here, yeah, call me sooner. Like that's all I'm saying. That's it, right? And again, it's not a moan or grab. I know. Trust me, I've booked stuff, working internal, a bunch of it, and it's tough because you're like, I don't know. It might happen. It might not happen. We're thinking about this. But as soon as you're ready, just let me know as soon as you can, because then we get to plan and I get to figure out travel, and I don't have to say, I'm sorry. I can't help you. So again, thehopnerd@gmail. Yeah, there we go. thehopnerd@gmail.com and thehopnerd.com. If you just want to book a consult, make sure you check out the shop while you're over there and check out the resources section and all that stuff. All those videos I was mentioning, eventually we'll get them over there for you to download and use and borrow and steal and make better and use for good. Remember, that's the rule. Hey, with all that out of the way, let's jump into this weird, wacky episode. Man, I forgot to ask you at the beginning how you're doing. I'm sorry, I got excited to get into this weird, strange thing that we're doing today. But yeah, how are you doing? I hope things are going well for you wherever you find yourself in this big, wacky, strange, and weird world. And I think that's important. I know I do that a bunch, and I know that you. I don't hear voices. I know. I know you can't answer me back, but at least immediately. But many of you do. Many of you send me emails like, you know, hey, it's great to listen to you. How you doing? How you feeling? I've got a backlog, so if you send me an email or a DM lately, you know, I it takes me a minute to get to them. I promise I'll get back to you. But I do hear from you, which is always that little glimmer of light in the void of the internet, in the dark hellscape of the internet and the podcast world. But I do. I think that's important that we ask each other that more. We do a bad job of that. We just make that assumption like, oh, they're doing great. They're doing well. Like I see them posting. I see them doing that stuff. But man, it's better to ask. It's always better to ask. If not for anything else, it feeds your soul and it feeds somebody else's. It's just something I don't know. Sorry, I didn't mean to rant right at the beginning. But here we go. I wanted to do something a little bit different. And what I wanted to do was have AI ask me some questions. I was doing that podcast episode back with my amazing friend, the great and powerful Stephen Harvey, where we talked about creative stuff. And Steve's doing amazing stuff. And what I would just call everything, like with music and posts and writing, and he's just doing cool stuff. So if you're not following Stephen Harvey on LinkedIn and Instagram, I think it's Safety B Hoy. Is that right, Steve? I don't know how to pronounce your Instagram. I'm sorry. Hopscotch Safety something. It's there. You'll find Steve. And we were talking about creativity, and he's been using some like AI tools. And I've not been anti-AI, but I did admit to my AI use. And what I use it for is it sounds like this. I write crap. Yeah, I write crap and I write it out on a pad, or I write it out on my phone and I write it out on Word if I'm lucky enough to be behind my computer for more than a few minutes. And I write it out, and then I'm like, ugh, man, I'm a hillbilly. And then I'll copy that, right? I'll copy that and I'll put that over into Gemini. And don't get me wrong, it sounds good. There's not like too many like y'alls and yanks and ain'ts and all that kind of stuff. But I'm like, my spelling could probably be a little bit better. It's like structurally good, looks good, reads good. Looks like I'm living up to my deep mountainous roots, you know, and no shame. Like, but I'll copy that. And here's my use of it. You ready? Make this grammatically correct. Don't change anything, but make it grammatically correct. Boom. Grammatically correct. Yeah, so I'm probably lacking in AI skills compared to many. But you inspired this one, Steve, so I'm going to roll with it and kind of see how it goes. And what I'm going to type in here is give me a list. Now, wait a second. Let me back up, because I did precede the water here a little bit. It's something that I have learned enough about with AI. It doesn't work all that well. So the first kind of questions that I ask around this is like, hey, my name's Sam Goodman of the Hop Nerd LLC and the Hop Nerd Podcast, a company and podcast focused on human and organizational performance. Okay, cool. And then I asked it, give me some questions about hop. Can you ask me questions about hop? And then it spit out some like gobbledygook. And then I asked, not exactly. Just give me a list about 10 questions you'd ask me about hop. And here we are. You ready? And question number one, it asks this. What initially sparked your interest in human and organizational performance? Was there a specific event or experience that drew you to this field? Yes and no, I guess is probably the right answer to that. I found myself here after years and years and years in the safety profession, and many of you have heard this story, so I apologize. I'll try to keep it pretty short and sweet and concise without getting too windy and weavy and rambly. But I started in safety at what I would call, at least at that time, a pretty young age for a safety professional. I'd been working in fire and EMS. I'd had some friends and family that had moved over and started working in something I'd never heard of before called nuclear power plant outages. Yeah. And if you've been in that world or a similar world, you know, like those worlds aren't necessarily easy to break into, even if you know people that work there. And especially if your main skill set is in fire and EMS and rescue and stuff like that. But I had hillbilly ingenuity. And what I mean by that is jack of all trades, master of none kind of thing. I can kind of sort of do a little bit of everything. Yeah, need it fixed? I can fix it. It might not look pretty, but it'll be fixed. It'll work. It'll work right. It might be missing some parts, and I don't know how well it will work for the long term. But yeah, I can do stuff like many of you. You're just handy. That's probably the right way to put it. You kind of look at stuff and you just go, I've never done that, but I know how that works. I know how that works. I've never studied that, but I can make that work. So where I was going with this is I made phone call after 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 phone call, and then some more phone calls calling recruiters. And back then, you know, people just like give you a little, pull out your notepad and write this down, this name, and here's their number. Call them until they give you a job. And then that doesn't work. Here's another recruiter. Call them. There's a job coming up at this plant. Insert plant name here. Call them. And you would call and call and call, and you get no. And I have a decent job, right? I have a great job. I'm working in fire and EMS. But where I was from, very small area. As far as a long-term career, if you're going to commit to that, you're going to have to work at least a couple other jobs on the side to make ends, if you wanted anything more than ends meeting, right? That's just how it was. And so eventually, after calling, one recruiter, they told me, like, okay, I've got a job for you. Really? Yeah. What is it? It's a fire watch job. It's a fire watch and a helper job. You're going to be helping pipe fitters. And I'm like, what's, like, I'm a firefighter. what's a fire watch? They're like, oh, you're a perfect fit. I didn't know at that time. I'm like fresh green, right? I took my EMT way back in high school. They offered it in high school where I was from, and went and did my firefighter stuff and did all those things super early. And so I'm still pretty young at this point. When I found my way into this, I hadn't been exposed to too much, at least not like this kind of safe industry where you actually used fire watches, right? There's probably a procedure somewhere that said you had fire watches. And then I found my way into that as a fire watch and a helper, where I did more helping than I did fire watching. But when I did fire watching, I would sit on the bucket, and then the pipe fitters would smirk at me like, why do you just get to sit there? We don't need a stupid fire watch. And you get to stay here 30 minutes after. Oh, never mind. We're going to lunch. You stay here while we all go to lunch. And then when you come back, you know, you're wearing your little fancy pants vest with your fire extinguisher sitting on a bucket. Yeah. Yeah. That's a really long, rambly way to tell you that I found my way into nuclear power. And then I kind of never turned back. And then I worked in that world for a while in the trades before I found my way into what we would call at that time a field non-manual position as a field safety professional. I got to know some of the safety folks. I'm like, this sounds interesting. And I started studying and I started learning more and I started going to classes and then found my way into the profession. And I was as green as new grass, you know, and so I just kind of trusted. I was like, these folks, you'd walk in this room, back to being young. This is the full circle weave, I guess. There wasn't not too many young folks kind of in that world at that time. Like the rule was almost like if you're not at least 50, you can't be in safety. Yeah. If you're not 50, like 50 is like the green level. You can't be 25. You can't be 22. You can't be 20. You definitely can't be fresh out of some weird safety school. Who does that? Right. At least back then. Right. And so when you'd walk into this room, you'd be like, oh, how long have you been in safety? Oh, 25 years. And then I was doing this for 30 years before that. Right. And how long have you been in safety? 20 years, 40 years, and on. I've been in this for 4 years, and then I was a pipe fitter for 40 years. Wait a second. You're 102. Like, yeah, I'm 102. Why are you not I like buying cars and boats and guns and yeah. So you walk in there and you've got all this experience, hundreds and hundreds of years of experience in this room, rooms that you would walk into. Cause at that time I would bounce around, obviously job to job to job. And I trusted, and I'm not saying I shouldn't have trusted, but I was like, they're like, here's how you do safety. Sticks and carrots, metrics, safety signs, walking around yelling at people, like that kind of stuff, you know? And then over time, the shine of that wore off really fast. Like within a few years, I'm like, this is dumb. Why are we doing this to people? What the heck? Right. And fortunately, I had kind of grown in leadership roles at this point with the large kind of contract companies I was working for. And had opportunity to at least change what I could, which then, you know, maybe back to one of those experiences I found. I had this experience, which I've shared with you a bunch. It's in a bunch of the books, where it's like we were having one of those big OSHA-free recordable-free celebrations where we had pizzas and barbecues and executives that flew in. And, like, most of the people on site stopped work and came, and we had balloons and handed out trophies and all that kind of stuff. And then there was a small skeleton crew of folks that still had to do something because it was, like, critical work. And one of those employees was like not killed. I wouldn't even say horrifically maimed, but hurt good. Yeah, like hurt real good. You know when you're hurt good, when you're like, ow, wait, I need to go to the hospital. That's hurt good. You might not be missing something. You can still see. You can still move. It might not be some immediate something affecting your life. Like you're not going to die. But you got to go get fixed at the very least. You got to go get fixed. that's hurt good. And it just kind of, I was already working, and several of us kind of in our little secret scroll groups chatting, were already working, trying to do things different, kind of rallying against this big corporation that thought safety was just to tell people to try harder. And when they don't, beat them. Garbage, hot garbage. Everybody sucks except for us. At corporate, we're the only ones that care. All the rest, yeah, you know the spiel. I don't have to get into it. But that's when it all came crashing down, and at least in a really positive way. That's where I made up my mind that it's like I'm either not going to work in this profession anymore. I can't do this anymore. So I will take any other job, even if it means living under a bridge. Like, that's cool with me. or if I'm going to stay, I'm going to fight like an MF-er to change things. And if that means me getting fired from jobs, if that means me getting ostracized, if that means people yelling and making fun, I don't care. Our people deserve better than this. We shouldn't treat them like crap. We shouldn't treat them like children. Excuse me, I've got more crud. I've been traveling around. You know how that goes. We shouldn't treat them like children, and we definitely shouldn't treat them like shitheads. So we definitely shouldn't treat them like shitheaded children, because they're just not those things. At the very least, we should treat them how we would like to be treated. We can do better, and we should do better. We owe better to them. Work shouldn't suck. Safety included. So there's a bit of that, I guess. There's kind of how I found my way into it. You know the rest of the story. I went and worked for a utility for a bit, a couple of utilities. I did different things like that. Led a couple of organizations down this path of human and organizational performance. You know the spiel about how we were doing kind of HOP stuff. We didn't know it was called HOP stuff or safety differently stuff and good. Like, we didn't need a name for it. We just knew we needed to do something differently. We needed to quit like being shitheads ourselves. Yeah, as organizations. And then found my way here. There you go. That was a bit longer than what I thought it was going to be. Sorry about that. There, yeah. And I shortened it a bunch. So I'm going to leave that one there. I think I'm going to leave that one there. And move on to the next question, so we can at least get in a few of these before I have to say bye-bye, see you later, love you, mean it, all that kind of sort of stuff. The next one that it asks is, for someone completely new to the concept, how would you explain HOP in a simple, relatable way? You know my definition of HOP here, that I talk about HOP, and it gets some heat because people want very specific checkbox, tell me, like, but I don't know that's very useful to box HOP in. I think about HOP and what we do, at least here at the HOP Nerd LLC, not so much about just like coming in and like doing HOP. Like, that doesn't work well. It doesn't work well for a consultant to do that with you. That doesn't work well for you to try to do that way internally. If you have consultants that are coming in and just like one side or the other, or even in the weird kind of middle, I don't know, not to get into a side rant. I've seen this here lately where it's like, there's a lot of these folks that are HOP companies, right? And they're usually like, they're not solo practitioners. They're not folks that I would send you to. That's probably the right way to put it. When we're talking about, hey, I've got this date full, I would not give you, these are the names I would not give you. But there are these folks that are kind of like masquerading traditional safety as HOP and kind of stripping out all the stuff that they're making it more palatable for sales reasons is probably the right way to put that, where they're like, we're going to take out that blame thing and tell you that, you know, golden rules are good. And if I catch somebody out there, you know, doing something like that, I'm not going to seek to understand. I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm not going to try. I'm going to help you fire. Like, come on. Like, you're not a HOP practitioner. You're just a traditional safety practitioner that's using HOP as a marketing ploy at that point. And cool for you if that's making you money, I guess. But it won't for long. It's probably the right way to say that. But where I'm going with this, or on the other side of that, where it's like, I don't, if you go to the so pure level of like, this is HOP and this is, it's just those five principles, and there's nothing more, nothing less, and everything from traditional safety sucks. Everything from anything else that anybody else has done sucks. It might make you some money, but it's not going to work for you. It won't for very long. Yeah, and both of those and more of those kind of variations are going to put your client in a worse position than where you found them, which let's maybe say that too, is that that's kind of the goal. If you're really like consulting with noble intent, and not just as a money-making endeavor, maybe back to the first question, HOP is a passion for me. Yeah, it is a complete passion project. I do it when I don't make money. Yeah, I continue to do it even when I'm not making money. I do stuff for free more than I should. Trust me. I get yelled at for that one quite a bit. But we're all making a living. Obviously, if you own a company, you're making a living. Even if you're passionate about it, even if it's your passion project, your goal is to still at least earn a living, like to be able to eat, to be able to pay your bills. Of course it is. Yeah. But it's not about you. And what I mean by that is that my goal is always to leave people in a better condition than how I found them. It's really that simple. Yeah, it really is. if you're starting on a very traditional footing, the last thing I'm going to do is come in and tell you that everything that you're doing sucks and everything is terrible and traditional safety is terrible. And I don't believe that everything in traditional safety is terrible. I just don't. I'm building towards something here, I promise. And most of you know that. But if I come in and I find you in a very traditional space, my goal isn't just to overnight make you into a hop company. It's to leave you in a better position than how I found you. If you're like advanced super pro level hop practitioners, my goal is to leave you in a better condition than how I found you. It truly is that simple. So this was this spiraled into a bit of a rambly rant, but back to the question of how I would explain this. I'm getting there, I promise. I tend to build towards that definition that we use. When we do these workshops, when we do these presentations, I build towards this definition that sounds something like, human and organizational performance is this set of better ideas, beliefs, thoughts, and assumptions from diverse and varying sources like traditional safety and HOP and safety differently and resilience engineering and HRO and on. These things that we've learned and built on over time, this evolution of our approach that we then apply through this kind of core set of HOP principles, right? And we know the HOP principles. So that's kind of like the base level definition. But to the point here is if we're explaining this to somebody that's new to HOP, they're going to go, okay, so what's that mean? Well, it's a leadership philosophy. And then we're going to say, they'll be like, okay, but what does that mean? And then they're going to be like, you're going to say something that's like, well, it's not a program. It's not a this, it's not a that. And they'll be like, what does that mean? And what they're really asking you usually is they're asking you, what does this do for us? Like, what's the point? And the point here is operational learning. Like, I'm really, really, and let me zoom that out to kind of zoom out to match maybe our definition a little bit. That definition, dot, 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 let's add a dot, 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 and say that it's an operating philosophy that when we lead through that operating philosophy, it helps us create an environment in which people can tell us the truth. What that means is that it's an operating philosophy that helps us create, when we lead through those principles, when we really mean it and we lead through those principles, it helps us create an environment in which operational learning is possible. Now we're getting somewhere, dot, 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 dot. When we lead through those principles, it helps us to create an environment in which we get to know more. See where I'm going with this. That's really where I go to explain it, is that these principles, they're not things that we do down through our organization to our employees like we've done with so much that has fallen flat on its face. If you go out and you tell a frontline employee that error is normal, they're going to be like, well, duh, it is. The only people that seem to have a problem with that idea are typically live up through our organization. The farther you get away from work, the easier it is to look down and say, well, if only they cared more. If only they tried harder. These pesky people, I don't make errors. I never make errors. So I can't. Well, sure you don't. You see what I'm saying? It goes the other way. It goes up through our organization. It's things that we lead with. It's really this operating philosophy, these principles, these kind of guiding stars, this understanding that we know that when we live up to those things as leaders and as organizations, that we create an environment in which people can tell us the truth, an environment where we get to know more, an environment where we get to tap into operational reality, where we get the information that we need to learn and improve, to create improvement that matters. And what I mean by improvement that matters is improvement that actually improves things and doesn't make people's life suck along the way. Yeah. So if I'm talking base level definition, it's going to be right there. That's how I'm going to explain it. It's all about creating an environment in which operational learning is possible. It's all about creating an environment where we get to know more, where we get to learn and improve more effectively. So on to another question. What are some misconceptions about HOP that you often encounter? I think probably the biggest one that stands out to me, a couple things, probably the first one that just crawls into my mind. Sounds something like this. HOP's too squishy. HOP's too soft. If we take away the stick, how are people going to respect us and do what we tell them? It's too soft. It's just soft. It's not soft and squishy. It's not. Usually I share with leaders a lot this story of a good buddy of mine who's a high-level leader in an organization. And you might have read this, and I've shared this in other places. But good friend and just good person, good peoples. You know what I mean? Just good peoples. Great leader. Really kind of not so sure about HOP. Even though a lot of the way that they were leading were just what I'd call being a good leader. And the way that you react, the way that, like, they're leading through the HOP principles, being just a great leader, not even knowing that they're doing this stuff that we tend to loosely refer to as HOP. They're just a stinking great leader. But very unsure of our new approach in this company that I worked for. But trusted me. And that's important as we try to grow these things in these organizations is as practitioners, as evangelists of this stuff in our organizations, as people that are out there bringing about this change. Like, you got to bring some street cred or build some street cred to get much traction. Duh. Yeah, of course we do. Those are things we have to focus on. But trusted me and was like, I trust you. I don't know that I'm all hot and hip and on where we're going with this, but let's try it. And what they discovered, like, full-on supported it, like, full-on jumped in, like, no hesitation, kind of not leery, but full-on jumped in. And where we got, after the kind of the chipping away at it and getting there, and then, you know the process, we're sitting in his office, and he's like, listen, man, I was unsure about this stuff. And because we would do this thing where we would just catch up, like I'd grab coffee. He always had coffee. The coffee pot was kind of close to his big office at the end. And I'd walk in there and sit down and we would just catch up about anything, you know, just life, family. And it kind of popped up in one of those conversations. And he's like, I thought this stuff was squishy. I thought this stuff was soft, but it's cold and prickly. And I'm like, what do you mean? Yeah, well, hold on. What do you mean? You're like, well, the stuff that I'm hearing now. And it's that conversation like, well, this stuff's always been there. It didn't scare him. Don't get me wrong. But this was a very positive conversation. He's like, no, it's good. It's good. But people are like, I'm getting the almost out over their last Tuesday conversation. Like, and I'm like, it's giving me the information I need to be a better leader, to actually improve things. It's the tough conversations. People are reporting so much more, and people are walking in here and just telling me stuff. Like, they told me, like, they trusted me before, but they didn't trust the organization's reaction or what happens when we report it out of this location or up into the corporation and on and on and on and on and on. And as this stuff changed and they felt this, he got to see that firsthand. So hop is not soft and squishy. In fact, it's raw and real, which a lot of times is cold and prickly because it's just the truth. And the truth is not always easy. Sometimes the truth is hard. Yeah. So that's part of it. It's not soft and squishy. The other part that I think is a big misconception is that when we say blame fixes nothing, a lot of the folks that rally against hop say, well, yeah, but blame fixes some things. It's like, well, come on. What? Like, can we put a little bit of thought into what that says? Can we think just a little bit beyond just that one quick sentence, a few words on paper? Like, really? It's deeper than that. That's always it, right? It's like, oh, what am I going to do without being able to meet people? Well, let's maybe rephrase that one a bit and say that we use blame way more than we should. I would say that picking numbers out of thin air here. Yep, I'm harvesting numbers out of thin air. We do that for safety metrics a lot. Yeah. Observation goals. picking stuff out of thin air. I would say most of the time, let's say like 90% of the time, where we discipline probably wasn't the right move. Yeah, and that's weird when you think about it. That's scary when you think about that. Yeah, it's not good. It's not good to think about that. We struggle to think about that maybe we have fired people that really, yeah, there was a rule bent or broke. Yeah, there was an error. There was a mistake. But those people didn't actually deserve that. That hurts. That hurt them. And let's be real. That hurt them more than it hurts us. But thinking about that, it's hard to think that I was that leader that maybe fired somebody that actually didn't deserve to get fired because that was just an error. Like, and that wasn't a them problem. That was an all of us problem. Like, that was like, how do we make this thing better kind of problem instead of like, let's shit can people problem. I think that as soon as people see that principle that it's just the easiest one to grab onto and be like, see, everything you ever said is dumb because you think that disciplinary action and punishing people that don't deserve to be punished is bad. It's like, well, it just made you sound worse, man. I think it is kind of dumb to punish people for stuff that they didn't intend to do in the first place, hoping that it'll stop them from doing it again. that feels kind of ridiculous at the very least. Ineffective is probably the best way to put that. Doing more harm than good. And that's kind of where I'm going with this. I think the first misconception that I'll bust is that hop is blame-free. It's not blame-free. I don't know that anything involving humans can be blame-free. I just don't think that because it's just something that we do as people. I think that we can grow and understand more about our biases and this easy button of blame and this thing where we're like, we need heads every time something goes wrong. Like, we just need to lob off heads and string people up and like tar and feather people and blame shame, and on a good day retrain them, on a normal day fire them. Like we can outgrow that. We can outgrow that and still acknowledge that, like, it's normal for us as people to like jump to blame, but we can choose to go beyond it. Yeah. So I think that first kind of myth there is, myth is a strong word, that COP means we're going to get rid of all of our disciplinary action policy procedures, that we're going to get rid of performance management, that leaders aren't going to be able to be leaders and talk to their employees or correct their employees or coach their employees or teach their employees. That I remember one leader said, this is the inmates running the asylum. Like, well, if you're thinking about your workplace and your employees as inmates and you're the asylum keeper, I think you're starting in the wrong place. To begin with, back to adults, not children, especially not shithead children. They're definitely not institutionalized shithead children. Yeah, bad, not good. not the right place to start. I tend to rephrase that principle a bunch as we talk, because I think it's a great way to talk through it. As we start with this idea that blame fixes nothing, which I think is a fair thing to say. It doesn't actually make things better. Like, it doesn't actually make things better. If you throw that person that seems like the world's biggest supervillain in prison, because I'm going to use a really tragic example that happens here in Phoenix more than it ever should, because they left their infant in a hot car. Does that stop kids from dying in hot cars? It didn't actually fix anything. It doesn't. It doesn't. And I don't know that punishing a person like that in that way is ever going to punish them more than the punishment that they've already received. And I don't want to spiral into like some weird criminal justice thing here, because we've all got opinions on that, and that gets too out there for our conversations, I think. But think about that, right? This person that's like rushing into the store, like four kids and working three jobs, and like, you know, all the pressures of the world. We live in this pressure of this world, especially our modern world. It's insane, right? And not even realizing that maybe that kid crawled in the back of the car and hid, or whatever reason. There's like a bazillion reasons how that could happen, right? Reasons that with no ill intent that could happen. And now not only is that person lost a child, which is the most horrific punishment for an error that I could ever imagine. I couldn't imagine anything worse than that. But now we're going to blame and shame and jail them. Now think about how that plays out in our work worlds. That person has just lost an arm, but they should have been paying more attention. So we're going to blame and shame. And not only did they lose arm, we're going to take care of that, but they're not going to work again. We're going to make sure that we just kick them out of here and we tell everybody about how horrible and stupid they were. We blame the victim. We victim blame. We victim blame. That's really it. Yeah, we like to blame victims, because a lot of times that person that has that injury in our work worlds, that person that has that issue, that person that has that something happen to them, it has happened to them. Like, they found themselves at the end of a long line of organizational issues, problems, weaknesses, air traps, and on and on and on and on and on and on and on. They were just last person that touched it, but now they're the culprit. So this is getting a little ranty. So I'm going to zoom back out a little bit. I want to come back to maybe some of that example of kid hot car. Let's do one that's a bit less polarizing. Kid falls in pool. Yeah. So I'm giving you Phoenix problems right now. This is the news, unfortunately, in Phoenix during the summertime. Kid falls in pool. It's really easy to and drowns. I mean, you see this. It's the horrible, 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 horrible helicopter shot. You see it on the news. You know what's happening. As soon as you see it here, you know what's happening. You see a helicopter hovering over a house that looks just like yours, because every house in Phoenix looks just like everybody else's. Yeah. And you see the fire trucks. You see EMS. You see the deputies or the police outside. And you're going, well, I know what that is. And more often than not, you know, it's too late, which is tragic and sad and horrific. But we're so quick to say, well, where? Why wasn't the parent just always, you know, we blame. Instead of saying, why? Why do we not have fences and locks? Why do we not have those fancy pool cars? And I get it. It's the same reasons why we sometimes don't have them at work. Oh, we can't afford it. Oh, We really wanted the pool, so we put in the pool, but we couldn't afford the fence. And so where I'm going with this is you've seen those two tragic examples spur a lot of change. They still happen, but they happen far, far less. Remember a few years back, like the kid in the hot car thing was common, like way more common than it even is today. It still happens, but it happens far less. That's not because we started putting up billboards that said, hey, pay more attention, check on your kids. Those might have helped a little bit. Hey, if you've got a pool, make sure. It wasn't Hearts and Minds campaigns. Like nobody, no parent in their right mind wants their kids to die. Or, yeah, I think we can all agree on that. Especially not on their watch while they should be there doing so. Of course, but we're humans. We're humans. Those awareness, Hearts and Minds thing, that's not what changed it. It was local laws that said if you're going to build a pool, you have to put up, and you have children living in your house, you have to have up a barrier around it. At the very least, you have to have one of those like drown-proof, I think that's the word, drown-proof pool covers, like those auto-closing pool. Like you got to have those things. At the very, very, very least, the doors that access the pool area from your house have to have double locks on them, and one of those locks has to be child resistant and at a level that they can't reach. You get where I'm going? Yeah, it's the reason why car manufacturers, when you get in there, like they're like, check the back seat. They have, but they don't just tell you they have back seat sensors. It's like, hey, there's something in your back seat. Hey, there's something. It's the reason why all of this innovation comes along, because we know we eventually get to that point where we're like, you know, people actually aren't the problem. they're just doing people-y things. And as even when there's a horrific, tragic, terrible outcome that we couldn't even imagine, and it scares us because we think about if that would never happen to us and we could never do it. Oh, it just goes right towards, well, then that means if I would never, and that would never happen to me, then they must be freaking villains, terrible people. I know those. This is rambly ranty. I'm trying my best to keep it on track, but you get where I'm going with this. Blame doesn't actually fix anything. So when I'm having this conversation in a lot of these in-person sessions, I like to rephrase that. And let's say that blame stops learning. Oh, that still doesn't work too good. Well, then the next thing, well, but you could learn and blame at the same time. I would argue that you maybe can. I've never seen that work really well. So if you have magic blame learn superpowers that I just don't have, maybe, okay. But let's say that you're right, that you can blame and learn. Well, let's rephrase that again then. Blame makes learning less effective. Let's try it again. Blame makes it really, 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 really hard to learn effectively. Yeah? You get where I'm going. I'm not talking blame free. I'm not talking about stripping your organization of its ability to apply disciplinary action, maybe where you should, or definitely I'm not telling you to strip your leaders of their ability to coach and manage, performance manage their employees and correct. I'm not saying that. What I'm telling you is that blame just isn't all that curative. It just doesn't make things all that much better. Let's take one more rephrase as I take a sip of cold brew here. The misapplication, or maybe is misappropriation the right word? Misappropriation? The overuse and misappropriation and overuse of blame within our work worlds hinders our ability to learn and improve effectively. How's that for a corporate-y sounding one? There you go. Yeah. It's saying that we blame too much and we blame in the wrong places. And again, I'm putting this in the words that I think we need to keep them in, because I think we confuse the illity words responsibility, culpability, accountability. That's the big one, all to mean disciplinary action. We think blame means performance management, disciplinary action. It means all this stuff. When I don't think that's really true. We take that word blame and we take it to just be the overall blanket term of disciplinary action, performance management, coaching, correction, leadership. Like we just take that word as like, well, but it's blame. All that's blame. And it's like, keep using that word. I don't think you might know what it means. I used that snapshot from that movie the other day as a meme in the comment section because we were joking. We're going back and forth joking about people using the term coaching so like loosely as meaning that too, right? It's just like, well, I'm just gonna beat people up. That's coaching. Like come on. Yeah. You can have your disciplinary action program And you probably should, but does that mean that it has to be like just sprinkled salt and peppered with blame? Like it's just blame, shame, and fire? Like really? That's what disciplinary action means to you? Performance management is just blame? Really? That's what that is like you suck and it's your fault. Like that's what that means? Like disciplinary action is you suck and it's your fault. Coaching is you suck and it's your fault. Like really? I don't think so. I don't think so. I've shared this a bunch. You know, I'm going to share it again because I feel the need to share it all the time. Is like, just don't start there. That's a really, really, really great, like, kind of tactical tip. Is that if it's the first step in your procedure to blame, and again, I'm using this blame word to mean what we all kind of use it to mean in our organizations currently for some weird reason of all this stuff. maybe let me get a bit more surgical in how I say this. If the first step of your procedure is examine for wrongdoing and apply disciplinary action, that's the worst place to start. Yeah, because you're priming your organization to look for opportunities to blame. You're priming you're priming that process with this idea that people suck and it's their fault. Yeah, because guess what you're going to find? If you put that at the first step of the process, you're going to everything that ever goes wrong ever is going to be just be an opportunity to apply disciplinary action. The tactical pro tip is don't start there. Put it at the other end of the process. Like literally write it at the other end of your process. Put that farthest out of your mind. Like wrongdoing. Really? Like is like organizations are just is this just like a court system? Like come on, y'all. We know it's not. Like that should be the farthest thing from our mind after somebody gets hurt. After something goes wrong, it shouldn't be who was it and what do they deserve based off of how bad it was or how bad it could have been. Like, we know that that's the wrong place to start, but that's where we typically start. And guess what you find? You find that somebody made an error because you're always going to find that somebody made an error. You're going to find that in successful work and not so successful work. You're going to find that in event or event-free performance. You're going to find it in all those things. And we start there and we stop there. Or we start there and then we blame a bunch and then we get to the other side of that. After we blamed everybody and like beheaded our employees and like put up like their mugshot on the walls and be like, don't be like Jane, don't be like Bob. And then we go, huh, I wonder why our corrective action stuff come out of this. I wonder why we couldn't learn more about, that's why. There you go. It's really hard to blame and learn. So back to maybe some of dispelling some of this myth though, a rumor or whatever you want to call it. HOP doesn't mean you can't have disciplinary action. It just means it should be your absolute last resort, and you should apply that justly. Like, if you find error, you shouldn't just say you should have not had error, and here's your disciplinary action. What I'm telling you is that you should seek to understand. Yeah, like, your entire effort around this should be to understand how it made sense, whether it was an error or a mistake or a well-intended violation, which, you know what that is? That's just a mistake. That's all that is, because good intent. I bent the rules, I broke the rules, doing work for you, by the way, yeah, the organization, not just for funsies, not for shits and giggles. I was doing this to please you, and it didn't work out so well this time. That's not an opportunity to beat people up. That's an opportunity to learn. That's an opportunity to learn and improve. Of course it is. Of course it is. So this whole notion of like HOP is just warm and fuzzy, we hit that one, and then it means that we can't ever discipline people. We'll never fire anybody ever again. We'll never coach. Like that employee that comes in late, what you're telling me in HOP is that employee that comes in late every single day and just kicks their feet up on their desk and just smokes cigarettes sitting there and cracks a beer midday. Man, that sounds like a fun place to work. And just like turns up like old Hank Jr. music and just blasts it all day sitting there smoking cigarettes. That means we can't get mad at them. That means that we cannot discipline them. It means that just stop. Like, it makes you look silly when that's the argument that HOP means that, like, there's none of this stuff ever again. Like, that's not true. We just know. We know that that's true. So, sorry. Again, I'm rambly ranting. AI is asking me some interesting questions. It's weird, right? It's weird. Come on, man. It's weird. What's next? Hold on. Let's get on cold road here. How can organizations get started with HOP? I tell people the first principle to focus on is your reactions. Yeah, to move from react to respond. I think that's the thing that we can just do. And now when I say we can just do it, that's making it sound really easy. It is not. Because this is a bit of a catch-22, is that if you have a problem, I'm going to tell you to focus on reaction. But the thing is that you're moved from reaction to response. You don't really move from react to respond until you get good at the other principles. So this is kind of a little sneaky. But if I can get you focused on responding better to events, really, as we said, move from react to respond, from a freaked out meltdown panic to Who's hurt? What do they need? Who's responsible for getting them what they need? Operation Safe, Stable, Secure, and on. And ultimately working towards, okay, how do we learn? How did this make sense? How do we effectively improve? If I can get you going down that path instead of like blame, shame, and retrain, you're already kind of by proxy working on the other principles too, because you're starting to shift your assumptions around error. You're starting to really examine context. You're starting to move beyond blame, or at least at this point, early in a journey, just getting started, you're at least holding, right? You're going to press pause on blame and judgment and shame and retrain and fire to go down a bit of a different path. And if I can get you started down that path, get you just a couple foot down that path, it's hard to turn back. And what I mean by that is once you start to get those little like nuggets of like, Bob, you start with, they were dumb. Bob was dumb. Jane was dumb. Get you a couple feet down that path and you find a couple of those little nuggets, Easter eggs. I don't know. Something wonky to say there. It's hard. It's hard to then turn back and be like, yeah, to throw those down and then run back and go, I'm just going to blame them. Damn it. That's hard because you're starting to catch those seeds. Those little glamours, those glimpses I'm making up words. you're starting to see how it made sense and starting to pique your curiosity because it's challenging your assumptions a bit of where you started, of like, this was just some dumb person. You're picking up those little seeds and you're starting down there. And you bought some time. You bought some time and you're moving down this path of learning. It's hard to just stop and go back to blame. Yeah, so a good catch 22 kind of, because what I mean by catch 22 is that if you react more than you respond, if you blame and shame more than you learn and improve, it means you have a problem with the other principles. You're not living up to those. That's more the output side of things, right? A very highly important output, because that's the pressure point. That's the pressure test for your employees. That's the intersection. I'm just making up funky sounding corporate words now, as I did before. But that's where they get to figure out if they can trust you. Yeah. When they bring you that stuff that they know they don't want to have to tell you because they know you don't want to have to hear it. When they do that and then you rip their head off, they're not going to do it again. They're testing you. Yeah. Yeah. If you respond a bit more gracefully, if you extend grace and understanding, guess what? They might just do the next time. They might just tell you that and maybe more. Yeah. So it's an important one. But back to that catch 22 part is that's where if we're reacting more than we're responding, if we're blaming and shaming more than we're learning and improving, or blaming and firing more than we're learning and improving, there's a principal problem. But by deliberately choosing and choosing to focus on tempering our reactions and focusing on more of response and seeking to understand how it made sense. By proxy, you're working on the other principles because you're starting to discover that, wait a second, these things actually make sense. Like, this is not just a dumb person. Look at the situation that they found themselves in, the condition, the context in which they were working. Of course they made an error because they were a person. I can start to see how, if it were me in that particular situation, I would make an error too. It's easy to make an error there. It's actually easier to get it wrong than it is to get it right. You're starting to discover all that stuff. Yeah, so there you go. That's where I would tell you to start. Yeah, and so maybe if I wanted to give you one more, is the other one is just focusing on finding those little like hop bright spots in your organization, that little hop army. If you haven't read the article over on the website, there's a couple iterations of it that I put in the blog over the years of just kind of adding to and tweaking and adding more story to it. But it's called like growing hop, or like you'll see it. It's about the hop journey. I share that's where we started. We started with conversations. All right, we started with like groups of employees that we had these conversations. And these were conversations in our organization, big, old school, traditional, heavy-handed sticks, a lot of sticks and very few carrots. Like, we're going to beat you into submission. We're going to beat error out of you. We're going to beat safety events out of you, which just meant that we all shut up and we got really good at case management. You know the output of that stuff. They thought that they were doing good, and it looked on paper like they were doing good. But yeah, we're just giving them what they wanted to hear because they demanded that that's all they could hear. We started having these super secret conversations that would have gotten us fired in that organization. The things like, I don't think everything's preventable. This whole zero thing and these signs are dumb. This is dumb. Counting human errors and then putting human error clocks up, that's dumb too. Like they fired Jane last weekend, but Jane was like the most kick-ass employee we've ever had. Yeah, like, really? Because Jane got a scratch? Like, come on. And on. But we started having these conversations. There are like-minded folks, even if you feel like you're the only one in your organization that thinks this way right now. That's not true. I promise. I felt like that. And then I slowly discovered, like, oh, wait a second. You too? Like, yeah, me too. Those groups grow, and those super-duper secret conversations grow. And then eventually we found our conversations full of certain executives that thought this way that couldn't say that they thought this way, at least not in the C-suite. Yeah. And it grew and grew and grew and grew and grew. And then out of these leaders and these practitioners and these safety professionals and these craftspeople and everybody, like, there's no rules to that. Like, whoever wants to come have this conversation will have it. We then move towards working on reactions and demonstrating better response, moving from react to respond, and on and on and on. So those are the things that I would share. Focus on moving from react to respond. Even if you're not quite, you know, like, I'm not going to blame, I remember. Just go down that path a few steps, and you're going to start to see that blame gets far harder because you're starting to see how it made sense. And on, we had that conversation. And start focusing on having those little, even if they're super duper secret behind closed doors conversations about doing things differently, that's where all this stuff starts, y'all. Well, what do you think? I think AI did a good job of lobbing me some questions. I think that they were interesting questions. And what do you think? Let me know. You know how to get a hold of me, thehopnerd@gmail.com. A huge shout out to my buddy Steve Harvey for inspiring this episode. Yeah, it's pretty stinking neat. I thought it was cool. Thank you, AI. If anybody's wondering, I was using Google Gemini. Yeah, that's who spit me these questions. Now, it took a couple tries to figure out what the hell I'm even talking about. Through some more interesting prompts, that was probably user error on my part. Blame me, shame me, fire me. Yeah, I'm going to fire myself. Don't worry. I'll write myself up, and then I'll sign it later for that user error. Thanks for being here, everybody. I always appreciate you. I hope you know that. How much it means to me that you take out this time of your day to spend time with us here on the podcast, to like and share and interact with our posts. It means a ton when you buy that t-shirt, when you pick up that book. It means the world to me when I get to come out and spend time with you in your organizations or at your conferences and all those different things. I hope you know that it is so much appreciated and never taken for granted. And when I say I love you, I mean it. I love you. I mean it. You know how to get a hold of me, thehopnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, everybody. Bye, everybody. Bye. Thanks for listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hot Nerd Podcast, the Hot Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehotnerd.com or send me an email, thehotnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye.